All right, we're ready for Genesis 26 to 28 in our study. And we are obviously in the second major section of the book as we deal with the patriarchal period. And we are dealing with Isaac, and we will get into the section on Jacob. And so that's where we are in our outline. Let's review our chapters. Because we're getting so many, we won't take every single one. Chapter 1 was... All right, yeah, the 6 days of creation. Chapter 6. All right, yeah, reason and preparation for the flood. Chapter 6 through 9 deal with the flood. All right, so chapter 9. All right, yeah, God's covenant, Noah's drunkenness. All right, chapter 10. Yeah, the nations that came from Noah's son. Now, chapter 13. All right, yeah, chapter 13, Abram and Lot return to Canaan. Chapter 14 deals with war among the kings. All right, let's go to chapter 18. All right, yeah, three men visit with two announcements. Chapter 20, something very similar to tonight's study. Yeah, Abimelech takes Sarah. Chapter 22. Yeah, the offering of Isaac. And then last week we talked about chapter 23, 24. And so 25 dealt with. All right, yes, Abraham's death and the birth of Jacob and Esau. All right, let's go to chapter 26. Question number one, what is chapter 26 about? All right, Isaac and Abimelech. You may have worded it a little different. That's fine. It's dealing with Isaac and his connection with Abimelech, similar to Abraham's dealing with Abimelech as well. All right, let's go ahead and finish question number one. Chapter 27 deals with... Yeah, Isaac blesses Jacob instead of Esau. And then chapter 28, Jacob's dream. All right, question number two. How did Abimelech find out that Rebekah was his wife, Isaac's wife? Way they interacted, very good. We'll come back to that phrase a little bit later. All right, let's go to chapter 26 now. There are three things that happen, and if you are looking at a previous outline I had, it had more points in it, but I've meshed them, and as I tell these guys in preacher training, we tightened our material here, I think, by... changing our outline a little bit. But be that as it may, same points, we just kind of grouped them different. We have Isaac goes to Gerar, and what happens there? Then we have Isaac moves away from Abimelech. He's going to Abimelech in verses 1 through 11. 12 to 33, he moves away from Abimelech, and then we have Esau marrying two women. So we'll see who those are and what that's all about here in just a moment. Look at the first 11 verses. We have Isaac goes to Gerar. So let's see where that is on the map. That's where Abimelech's reigning among the Philistines. So to get your bearing, this is the Dead Sea. Here is our city that we're talking about. And that's where Abimelech was when Abraham came in contact with him, and that's where he is now. So that is in chapter 26. Now, chapter 26 tells us there was this great famine in the land. So verses 1 to 5, what God tells him, I want you to stay in Canaan instead of going to Egypt. I don't want you to go somewhere else. I want you to stay here. Now, we'll talk about the significance of that and the promise that God made here. We're going to see all of that as we unfold that. So Isaac went to Abimelech in Gerar. And verse 2, the Lord appeared to him and says, do not go down to Egypt. I want you to dwell in the land that I will show you. In other words, sojourn here, and I will be with you, and I will bless you and your descendants. And we'll get back to that promise in a moment. One of the first impressions I get from that is that took some faith. When there is a famine in the land, it would be better, you would think, from human reasoning, to go to Egypt, wouldn't it? To go somewhere else, go away from this land where there's a famine. Now, it says that this was a famine besides the first famine. Well, that's talking about Genesis 12. In the case of Abraham, Genesis 12, I believe it's about verse 10. You can check that and see. But anyway, that took some faith on his part to stay in a land when there's a famine in the land and God's going to take care of him. Now, what I want you to notice at verse 3 and 4 is we have the same promise that was given to Abraham in Genesis 12 of the land, the nation, and the seed promise renewed to Isaac. Make sense? So notice the land promise. At verse 3, I will give you the lands, give you all these lands. So I want you to stay in this land because this is the land I'm going to give you. So here's the land promise. Then at verse 4, I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven. There's the nation promise. And then at the end of verse 4, we have the seed promise. In your seed, all nations of the earth shall be blessed. Same promise given in Genesis 12, 1 to 3. Make sense? All right. So God said, I want you to stay here. I'm going to bless you. And so Isaac has confidence in that, and he stays there. That took some faith. Now, Isaac told Abimelech that Rebekah was his sister. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, very familiar. For a different reason. There was a different circumstance. And I'll tell you what I mean by that here in just a second. So beginning at verse 5, because I want to go back to the verse 5, though. I skipped verse 5. I only covered verses 1 to 4. Some interesting phrases. Two things I want you to see in verse 5. That God said, I'm going to do this because Abraham obeyed my voice. What do you make of that? Not because you obeyed my voice, but because your father Abraham obeyed my voice. Yes. I think that was in chapter 18, if I recall, that God had told Abraham that he would raise his children according to the will of God, and that would be carried on. So yeah, that's part of that. In fact, the major part of that discussion. But it's interesting to me that God says to him that I'm going to bless you because of the faithfulness of your father, the faith of Abraham. That was demonstrated. Because of that, I'm going to bless you because of that. The second thing I want to point out at verse 5 is this reminds me of Psalm 119. You remember in Psalm 119, there are several statements made, or Psalm 19, not 119. 119 would be similar, but Psalm 19, there are several different expressions that describe the Word of God. The law, the statutes, the commandments, the judgments. Remember that? We sing a song about that. All right, verse 5. You obeyed my voice. You kept my charge, number 2, and my commandments, number 3, and my statutes and my laws. 5 descriptions of the same thing. Each one gives a little different connotation, but it's all concerning God's revealed will. And so because Abraham kept my voice, kept my law, kept my statutes, kept my commandments, my charge, and my laws. That's an interesting way of expressing that. All right. Now, let's start at verse 6 now. Isaac takes off and he goes to Gerar, which is, again, west of the Dead Sea. And when he gets there, it seems, one writer made the observation that Abraham seemed to have the premeditated concept that when we get there, here's what's going to happen. They're going to want you, so let's tell them you're my sister. Where it seems like Isaac, if there was premeditation to that, we're not told of that. Maybe it was. I won't argue that he didn't have it. I'll just simply say we're not told. But anyway, when he was asked about his wife, he said, she is my sister. Is that the truth? No, it's his. It was a cousin, and so some suggest second cousin or first cousin once removed or somewhat, but anyway, she's related in that sense. Now, some argue that the term translated sister here just means a near relative. But his point is, he's trying to show she's not my wife, which means he's intending to deceive. So was it a lie? Yeah, it was a lie. He's lied about that. She's my sister, for he was afraid, same reason for Abraham, that they may kill me because she's beautiful to behold. In other words, they'll want her and take her for a wife, and I'm going to tell she's my sister, and she already did. Now, interesting at verse 8, after some time had passed, The king looks out his window, and what does he see? Yeah, he's showing endearment. Some translation says laughing. Some say use the word, several translations use the word caressing. Without getting graphic, some of the lexicographers of the Hebrew here suggest that it is not without sexual overtone, meaning that he's touching her or caressing her in a way that should only be with a man and his wife. Does that make sense? It's not that they're over there laughing and cutting up and having a good time, as you might with a friend, but he is touching her, or he is somehow using the word showing endearment that you would only show to a wife. Abimelech concluded, verse 9, what did he say? Yeah, quite obviously, she is your wife, and how can you say she's my sister? And so there's a practical lesson to learn. What do you learn from that? Yeah, there is behavior that's only appropriate between married people. And Abimelech recognized that. Now remember Abimelech. Abraham had this impression of Abimelech before he got there, that Abimelech, or at least his people, those people in that region, they have no fear of God. But when he got there, he found out there was some fear of God. Remember that we talked about that? Isaac seems to have the same impression, but I'm quite impressed with Abimelech here. What impression do you get favorably of Abimelech over this marriage question as we get down through verse 11? Yeah, he had respect. If this is a man's wife, we're not to touch her. In fact, he's quite stringent about that. What did he say? Yeah, you're going to be put to death. Say again? Yeah, you'll be put to death for that. Very good, yeah. That's quite a stringent law. I'm going to kill you if you touch her. And he was worried back at verse 10. He's concerned not only that somebody may do wrong, but he's worried about the nation. What's he thinking about? Yeah, if we touch his wife, then notice the wording of verse 10. He rebukes Isaac, saying that one of the people might have soon lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt on us. So he does seem to have some fear of God. He does seem to have some respect for marriage. He does seem to have some respect for others. He's not quite the creature that Abraham thought he was dealing with earlier. Does that make sense? We've talked about that previous, that his impression of the people in that region was not accurate. All right, let's talk about Isaac moves away. In verses 12 to 16, let's kind of deal with that in a broader sense, and then we'll make some sense of that. What do you see in 12 to 16? All right. He would sow and he would reap 100-fold and began to prosper so much. He was very prosperous to the point that the Philistines had envy toward him. Verse 14. And they had stopped up the wells of his father. Now, why would they do that? There's a basic reason you'd stop up wells. Because they could use that water, couldn't they? In fact, the text indicates later they kind of wanted some wells. You do that when you're wanting to drive people away. When people are occupying a land, you stop up their wells, that makes them move on. And then they move on and have a well, you stop up that well, they move on. And so it seemed to be an indication of getting the people of Israel to move away from them. And that seems to be the most common reason that is suggested. And so they'd stopped up the wells. And so Abimelech says at verse 16, we want you to go away because you're mightier than us. That is, there's more money, more prosperity, and they're growing in number as well. So we want you out of here. Now then, let's start at verse 17 through verse 25. What does Isaac do? All right. He settles in this valley of, that's not what I want, in this valley of Gerar, which is just the region just south of Gerar. We'll talk about that a little bit later, perhaps. But he goes and he settles there, just southwest of Gerar is where that is, not far. Some have suggested maybe 5 or 10 miles or less, not very far at all. So he goes and settles. And Isaac dug a well there. He dug again the wells of his father. And what happens at verse 20? They claimed that was theirs, and so he called the name of the well Essek, which means, yeah, it means quarrel, because they quarreled with him. So they went and dug another well, and they quarreled over that, so he called its name Sitnah, which means what? Enmity. And then he removed and went to another one, and they did not quarrel over it, and he called it Rehoboth, which means what at verse 22? Spaciousness. Yeah, it means there's space or there's room. And because we have now found there's room for us. So, in other words, you see from the context, the idea of wells being occupied or closed is moving people away. Does that make sense? Keep moving them away. So finally, they no longer have a quarrel, and so now we found space for us. All right, now beginning at verse 23, and through verse 25, what happens? He went from there up to Beersheba. Now, we just talked about Beersheba. I mean, just saw it and I didn't talk about it, but we just saw it on the map. So over here is where he is. He's moved kind of southwest, and now he's made his way over to Beersheba. All right? Now, what happens here? Yeah, tells him not to fear. He said, I am your God, the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you, and I will bless you and multiply your descendants. And notice again this phrase. This is quite interesting. This is second time in this context. He's doing it for the sake of Abraham, for my servant Abraham's sake. So he built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord. All right. Now let's get this last subsection here. Abimelech makes a covenant with Isaac. He comes and finds Isaac now. Isaac has moved away, but he comes running to Isaac. I don't mean literally running, but he comes running over to him. And what does he say to him? He wants to make a covenant. What's the covenant he wants to make? Yeah, just basically peace. For you'll do us no harm and we'll do you no harm, and we didn't do you any harm when you were among us, and we sent you away in peace. Let's have peace between us. And so they had a feast, and he sent them away in peace. And notice this section ends at verse 33, that the place was called where they had this powwow, and for lack of a better expression, they called it Sheba, and the name of it is called Beersheba to this day. That's our city we just talked about. All right? So he's moved away, down, and then finally he's back over at Beersheba, and that's where this agreement was made with Abimelech. Making sense? All right, let's finish the chapter here and look at verse 34 and 35. At verse 34 and 35, you have Esau is going to marry Judith and Basemath. So only two verses devoted to this. Esau was 40 years old, and he took his wives, Judith, who was the daughter of a Hittite, and Basemath, who was the daughter of another Hittite. And we'll come back to the verse 35 in a moment. Let's get our bearing here in our family tree. So here we have Isaac, who is married to Rebekah. They have a son named Jacob. We're going to be talking about him. Remember, these crosses represent the lineage through whom the Messiah comes. But here's their other son, Esau, and here are his wives. Here is Judith, and here is Basemath, and this woman doesn't come around till about chapter, 36, I believe it is. So we'll get to her a little bit later. But we're going to see even another woman we'll get to before our study's through. Making sense? Paganism, I mean, polygamy was not uncommon among the patriarchs, having multiple wives. And I think the only explanation for that is in Acts 17, at the times of this ignorance, God winked at. Did God ever approve of polygamy? There is no evidence of that. Did God tolerate things in the Old Testament that he did not approve of? Absolutely. Acts 17 says so. At the times of this ignorance, God winked at. God overlooked some things. It is what it is. They had multiple wives. All right. Now, before we go to chapter 27, though, I want to go back and finish verse 35. What do you learn from verse 35? Yeah, this was a grief of mine to Isaac and Rebekah. What does that mean? It's a grief of mine. Yeah. Now, Isaac has made some bad choices here too. And so did Abraham. And so will others in the whole scheme of the patriarchs. But there was something that Isaac understood, that Abraham understood, that Jacob will understand, and that is marrying of the pagans of the land, it has a corrupting influence. They understood that principle. Whether they always would abide, they understood that. And so that was a grief to the mind of Isaac and Rebekah. Now, we'll see more about that principle a little bit later in chapter 27 here. Any comments on that? Or the whole chapter for that matter. All right. Let's go to chapter 27 now. And let's get question number 6. Why was Jacob blessed instead of Esau? Say again. All right. And there was deception. Two things involved. We'll flag that as we go even further. Let's go to question number 7. What was Rebekah's concern in chapter 27, verse 46? Yeah, she's fretting over Esau's marriage. And she's fretting over who Jacob may marry. And so that hadn't happened yet, but she's fretting over that, and rightly so. All right, let's get underway with chapter 27. Four things happen here. We have Isaac ask Esau to bring him some game and he would bless him. So the point here is Jacob is blessed instead of Esau. Now, before we get very far along, I want to back up to chapter 25. And in verse 23, if you were not here for that, you need to flag this verse. You need to mark it, highlight it, star it somehow, that when these twins were born, that God said, the Lord said to Rebekah, that there are two nations in your womb. And so out of her womb comes Jacob and Esau that represented two nations. That would be the Edomites and Israel. Two people shall be separated from your body. In other words, they're going to develop into two nations. One people be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. That's part of the blessing that we talk about, or is the blessing we'll talk about. And I'm not going to explain the difference in the birthright and the blessing until we get down to verse 36. And so just hang on about that. We'll get there quick as we can. All right. Now, at verse 1, Isaac was old. The context indicates that he thinks he is near death. And so does his children think he's near death. So what do we know about that? The answer is nothing, except he wasn't near death. Some have questioned, was he sick? Because he seems to be in the bed in the interaction that he has with Jacob and with Esau. So was there some sickness that we don't know about, maybe implied, maybe? I can't comment on that because I've told you really more than I already know. about that. The second thing is, when chapter 35 and in verse 28, he died at the age of 180. So how old is he here? I'm not going to give the evidence of that because I don't have it all with me. Brother Willis, in his second volume on the book of Genesis, page 67, if you want a reference on that, gives a great deal of information of chronology that suggests that we have to conclude he's 137 at this point. And if you don't have that book, I can photocopy the page and get that to you, whatever you want to trace that. I'm just going to leave it at that. Seems to be around 137. So he's got some years to live yet. He's got, what would that be? That's another 43 years, am I right? So he's not near as dead as he thought he was. He thinks he doesn't have long to live. And his children, a little bit later, think that the dad's not going to live too long. So anyway, he lived a little longer than they thought. Anyway, he says to his son Esau, go get me some of the game and take your weapons and go fix me some savory food such as I love and do that before I die. Verse 4. And that my soul may eat, and my soul may bless you before I die. That is not a general statement of, I want to give you something. I got a gift to give you. I want to pronounce some blessing upon you. He is aiming to give his son the blessing that is discussed in the context. That make sense? Now, what is that? Well, I said I was going to wait till I get to verse 36. I'll say more at verse 36 perhaps. There seems to be a distinction between the birthright and the blessing. The birthright had to do with a double inheritance. Now, I know this is before the law was given, but later in the law, Deuteronomy 20, I believe it's 21 and 17, talked about that the firstborn got double inheritance. And as one writer said, you always took the number of children and add one. In other words, if you had three children, and so you add one, so you divide all of your inheritance by four, and the first one gets two of those, and the rest get one each. Does that make sense? So if you had $1 million, you would divide it up to four $250,000, and the first one gets $500,000, and the other two gets $250,000 each. Does that make sense? So that's the birthright. Now, some argue that they are the same. Birthright and the blessing are one and the same. I take them to be distinct. You say, why do you do that? I think because of the wording of verse 36. And the birthright's already been dealt with. But there is this blessing that was dealt with back in chapter 25. God had already prophesied that the older shall serve the younger. So what was the blessing? The blessing was that the one who would become the head, which was generally, not always, but generally the eldest child, the eldest son, would rule over the rest when the father died. He would be the patriarch and rule. So that seems to be the blessing that's being dealt with in this context. And I'll give evidence as we go along. So that's what chapter 25, verse 23 was talking about. God said that the elder shall serve the younger. God had already stated that. So, I said there's flaws in the patriarchs. Here's one. Isaac seems to be attempting to do something contrary to what God had already said would take place. Does he come to an awakening moment? Absolutely. We'll see that over at verse 33. So, let's hang on for that. We'll get to that a little bit later. So, anyway, let's go now to verse 5. Rebekah overhears that. And what does Rebekah then say or do? Yes. So there is deception used. Deception has been used already. Some argue, and I'm not sure about this, that she's trying to drive Jacob in harmony with what she already knows is the will of God from chapter 25 and verse 23. Is that her motive? Or is she wanting Jacob to be blessed? I don't know. But maybe she was. We don't know that. I don't know, have any basis on which to say that other than she did know that, chapter 25, 23. I'll leave it at that. But anyway, Jacob kind of backs off from that from the standpoint of this may not work because yeah, he's hairy, and I'm smooth-skinned, different skin type, and da-da-da-da-da. So consequently, she figures all of that out, and she says, here's what we're going to do. Now, notice at verse 25, I'm getting, in interest of time, jumping on down, that Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, when he said, who are you, my son? Remember, Jacob or Isaac said, well, how'd you do this so fast? You went out to catch something, and you've come in here quick? That's kind of suspicious. So at verse 19, the thing I wanted you to see is here we have lying again. Here we have the deception. I am Jacob. I am Esau, your firstborn. And please rise and eat. And verse 22, Isaac said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau, because he couldn't recognize him because his eyes were dim. And he said, are you really my son Esau? Verse 24, here's the lie again. He said, I am. And so he came near and he ate. And then he ended up blessing him. Now notice at verse 27, he blessed him and he said, so here's where the blessing is pronounced. That is, you're going to be the leader, you're going to be the ruler. Let the people and nations bow down to you, verse 29. That's the same thing that was talked about, chapter 25, verse 23. Making sense? Make the connection, 25, 23, with chapter 27, 29. Talking about the same thing. The birthright is a different matter, I take it. So now then, let's start at verse 30 through 40. Esau comes in, and what happens? He's all excited because he's going to get blessed, thinking, I'm going to get the blessing, even though I've given up my birthright, I'm going to get my blessing because Daddy said I would. Yeah, too late, boy, is right. Who are you? Well, I'm your son. So notice verse 30. Here's something we want to flag. That Isaac trembled exceedingly. Let that sink in for a moment. Esau trembling? I understand. Isaac trembled exceedingly. It's too late. He's going to get done giving the blessing. Now, some have suggested that he suddenly realizes that what he's been trying to do is contrary to what God had said in chapter 25. Is that the reason? I don't know. Something made him suddenly realize it's too late. I've done blessed the son I didn't want to bless. But God had said you're going to bless the Jacob instead of Esau. Remember that, chapter 25? I keep going back there. That's what God had said. So he realizes he's been caught. One writer makes it, and I hadn't thought about this that much, but I think perhaps this writer is correct, that he's trembling because he realizes I have been exposed for trying to bless Esau. And he realizes what I have done is contrary to what God had already said. I would tremble too. All right. Flag another verse, verse 34. When Esau heard those words, let's go back though to verse 33. He said, I have blessed him and indeed he shall be blessed. Now that last phrase, indeed he shall be blessed, must have a direct connection to 25 and 23. It's got to have. I don't know how we cannot directly connect it back to 25 and 23. So I've blessed him and indeed, the tense of that, I don't have my information together on that, but the tense of that implies that he is saying that this is the way it was going to be regardless of what I did. He is going to receive the blessing. Seemingly thinking about the promise or the prophecy of chapter 25 and 23. I'll leave it at that. So look at verse 35. Verse 36 is the one I'm wanting. Esau said, this is the second time, I'm paraphrasing. The second time, I take it, there was the birthright, number one. And then the second time is this blessing. So what again is the difference? The birthright had to do with a double inheritance. The blessing is the one who would lead over the others. Chapter 25, 23, and other text. All right. You might flag another verse, verse 38. When Esau said, don't you have another blessing, father? And the answer to that is, no, I don't. Esau lifted up his voice and he wept. So he cried bitterly, he wept. Now quickly, verse 40, the father did say to him that there would be a time when the Edomites would break the rule of Judah over them. David, 2 Samuel chapter 8, 1 Kings 11, brought Edom under his control, under Israel's control. But 2 Kings chapter 8, verses 16 to 22, under Jehoram, they broke that rule and over them. So that did come to pass. He broke the yoke off of his neck. All right, now let's get verses 41 to 46. What happens here? Yeah, you need to go to Haran. All right, that's back up here at the northern part of the Fertile Crescent. And so you need to go from down here, you need to go all the way up to Haran, and you need to escape. But she tells Isaac that if he goes and gets a daughter of the sons of Heth, that is there in Canaan, if he marries a Canaanite, a pagan, then what was her response? Yeah, what good would my life be to me? In other words, she's greatly grieved over that. Now, our time is running short. We've got about 7 minutes, so let's see if we can get through chapter 28. I call this Jacob's dream. There's more to that than Jacob's dream. So in chapter 28, you have Isaac. Now, from the previous chapter, you think, well, Jacob has been sent off. No. She's telling him to go, but he hadn't gone yet. So what we have in chapter 28, Isaac sends Jacob to Laban for a wife and tells him to go to the region of Padan Aram, all right, where is that? That's right here close to Haran. The print's a little small, but right here is the city of Haran, and that region that's kind of sectioned off there with the different color is the region of Padan Aram. And so go to Laban, your mother's brother, go to your uncle's house and find a wife there. Now, notice at verse 3 and 4, may God bless you. This is Isaac speaking. He wanted to bless his brothers, telling Jacob, may God bless you that you may be in assembly and give you the blessing of Abraham to you and your descendants, etc. What do you think Isaac is realizing at this point? Yeah, I think he had to realize that I was wrong and I was on the wrong track in trying to bless Esau. Does that make sense? God had said it wasn't going to happen. He tried, it didn't work, and I think he's acknowledging that now. You're the one that was supposed to be blessed. You go forth, go find you a woman from your uncle's household. And so he sent him away to his uncle's household. Now, we have then a pause here in the storyline about Jacob to focus back on Esau. What happens with Esau here? He marries Esau when he found out that they'd sent Jacob away, and he realizes, you know what, Daddy's not too interested in Jacob marrying one of these pagans. Yeah, he ends up marrying one of Ishmael's children. All right, here we go. We talked about Esau. He's married Judith and Basemath. And this woman we've already mentioned comes along in chapter 36. And so he marries this woman, Mahalath, who is the daughter of Ishmael, part of the family. That made Daddy happy to send Jacob off. I'm interested in pleasing Daddy, and so I'm going to find me a woman. So that's three wives he's got, and he's going to get one more before he's over. Now let's go back and talk about Jacob's dream and the significance of that, and if there is any significance. Jacob's not there yet. He hadn't got to his journey, to the end of his, he hadn't got to his destination is what I'm trying to say. He hadn't got there yet. So on his journey, as he's making his way, what happens to him? Lies down to sleep. All right, he has this dream as a vision or dream. And what does he see? All right, a ladder reaches into the heavens and angels ascending and descending. A ladder or stairway. Some translations give the idea of a stairway. No big deal of a difference. But there is some way of climbing up into the heavens, at least in the anything's possible in a vision. Angels ascending and descending. Colin Daylitt suggests that it's a message. The message to be taken is that this is a means of carrying something from man to heaven and heaven back down. In other words, man's concerns are taken to God and God's blessings are brought back down. Maybe so. I know there are blessings coming down because of the context. Let's see how we know. So when he's finished from the dream, the Lord said to him, here we go again, and by the way, there's a connection in John 1:51, seems to be flagging this very story, if you want to make a marginal note. So look at verse 13 and 14. We have the land, the nation, and the seed promise being renewed. God had told it to Abraham, he renewed it to Isaac, and now he's telling it to Jacob. Making sense? All right, let's see if we can find the nation, the land promise. The land promise is at the end of verse 13, I will give you this land to your descendants. The nation promise at the beginning of verse 14, you make your descendants as the dust of the earth, and then in your seed all nations will be blessed. Same thing of Genesis 12, same thing we saw to Isaac, same thing again to Jacob. Making sense? All right. So it was the blessings of God coming down. Now then, let's see. Jacob said, what was his reaction, verse 17, when he awoke from his sleep after God had said, I said that promise, that was given while he's dreaming. When he wakes up from that, verse 16, what's his reaction? All right, notice that phrase. This is the gate of heaven. Now that gives me some insight of perhaps the purpose of that. This is the gate of heaven, of access to the blessings of God, and God indeed pronounces a blessing upon him. But let's go to verse 19. He called the place, what? Bethel, right here, just north of Jerusalem. He's on his way from Beersheba all the way up, and we don't have it on the map, but he's going to go on up to Haran. But when he gets here, that's where this vision takes place, this dream takes place. And he puts a stone down, and he pours oil upon it, and he calls it Bethel. And then he made a vow. What did he say? Well, first of all, before he makes a promise, he makes really two promises, but a twofold promise. In verse 16, if God is with me, in other words, now I recognize, I don't think it's like, I'm not sure, but since God has just told me, what did he say God had told him? Verse 20. Yeah, he's going to be with me and keep me in the way, and he's going to give me bread and clothing to put on. He's going to take care of me so that I'll come back to my father's house in peace. Then the Lord shall be my God. Here's his first promise. He'll be my God. He'll be the one that rules my life. He'll be the one that I serve. And secondly, of all that I have, I will surely give a tenth. I'm going to sacrifice to this God. Make sense? All right. Questions or comments? We don't have time to go through a lot of practical things. Here's a few. You might kind of glance through that. You see one you hadn't thought of, then jot that down. Chapter down third from the bottom, you can't go by feelings. That's a practical thing from this story. Isaac went on his feelings. He felt, oh yeah, this is Esau. Can't go on feelings. Behavior between male and female. Some behavior is only proper for husband and wife. What else do we learn? You can learn to marry one, love one that you marry. If in the day in the Old Testament, if they would pick out their mates or parents would pick out their mates and then they learn to love them, then the one you've picked out you can learn to love as well if you don't love them. You can learn to love them. God commanded it. We're going to stop on that note right there.